to be honest, haven't been thinking about the aesthetics of the show at all. I've mostly just been listening to it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Like, well, I had to go back and look what Emily Jasinski looks like. So I just turned something on and then, like, was going to fall asleep and then, like, stayed up all night or, like, for, like, however long it was. And I was like, oh, that's really good. And then I was like, what show? What is this?
Wow. Okay. So the algorithm is working.
No, my cognitive security agent told me about it.
Okay. Well, that is a great intro to the podcast. We're joined here by a cognitive security agent. And we're talking on the date that you have just released the video for your new single, Artificial Angels. This is the kind of where media segues into politics, right? Because like being of this kind of like early 2010s, like the kind of J-curve arc of social media, young people benefited from removing all of these gatekeepers.
Yeah.
And then you can stake out a creative career in maybe a particular genre or discipline that like didn't really exist before, right?
Yes.
Because of the rigidity of those institutional structures.
Yes.
But then now this is fundamentally a media problem in that we've removed the gatekeepers for politics and all of a sudden everyone is fucking crazy.
Well, also, if you look at it, removing these gatekeepers to such an extent has actually made more gatekeepers. Like I always like to point out like—
Who are the new gatekeepers? Like,
I think NFTs are a really good example. Mm. Where like when NFTs were first proposed, I was like, finally, we're going to be able to monetize digital art.
I was like,
oh my God, like this is so, you know, I know so many digital artists. And it just immediately, and this is one of these things where I feel like we didn't have enough of a moral high ground, and it just came in celebrities like pumped and dumped, like the Bored Apes took over everything. It had absolutely nothing to do with art, and it just became morally, socially destroyed. It just became creatively destroyed. It was like aesthetic destruction, and the cost is literally everyone who is a digital artist in some way. The cost is anyone who monetizes it. The cost is you, like this show, like, you know, when we did the Grimes AI voice thing, we used blockchain to be able to pay everyone every time I got paid. If you made money from a song I made with you, like, then you would get 50%, and it was automatic and it was easy. And that was a really great technology. And I feel slightly complicit in this because we actually accidentally had a really viral NFT at the beginning. But, you know, I immediately was like, because everyone was like, we got to do more. And I was like, we're not doing more because it's turning into a freaking money laundering scheme.
Right.
Like, I was like, I would love to do more. We could definitely make millions of dollars, but it would be wrong. Mm. And like, we, you know, also I'm like, this shit's, it's a bubble. It's going to, it, you know, and then I'm going to have
NFT
all
bubble.
My fans are going to lose money. If they like buy more of our NFTs because I feel really uncomfortable with how much of an obvious bubble this is. And like, especially when things started going crazy with the apes and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I think that's an example where absolutely no regulation cost like an entire generation of artists or more. I do think that technology is going to come back and we're going to be socially ready for it at some point in the future. Mm. But again, it's like, it's one of the few great propositions we've had, and it was destroyed, basically. And meanwhile, like the super shitty addictive things get to, yeah.
Well, this was one of the things I wanted to ask you about, the mood board industrial complex, right? There's a lot of like, especially in the age of early social media, a lot of really influential artists who never got paid for their work because these big brands would just upward appropriate them like directly from Tumblr into the mood board and then they'd make the ad campaign. And so people were hopeful around NFTs that you could have like people who made digital art finally get paid for once, and then just like gamification finance took over.
Yeah.
But what is your preferred solve of all of these different proposals for how to properly compensate artists? Because I think everyone is kind of skeptical of like streaming as a like
I do not. I think streaming is a big. I'm starting to lose faith on the streaming and stuff quite a bit. Because I also just feel like I care about music less. Hmm. Like, even if someone just makes me a playlist, I'm like, oh, like, I care about that so much more. I listen to playlists for my friends even so much more than, like, I just hate the algorithm. And the algorithm just, like for example, do you know the artist Cobra? Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's, like, I think she's really great. I have two songs with her on the record. Oh, yeah, we sent them to you. I think we misspelled her name on one of them. So sorry.
I won't tell her.
Even though it's such an, it's also just Cobra, but we spelled it Chobra, I think. But in any case, like, she's the most mood boarded artist. Like, I know a lot of songwriters and stuff around. Like, everyone's like, when they do sessions, everyone's like, I want to sound like Cobra. I want to make music like Cobra. And I, like, went on her social media the other day, and I'm like, like, how is this? We're in this simulacral world where the artist everyone's copying is so tiny. And like all the like K-pop people and all these other people are like Cobra, 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 Cobra. And it's like huge. Yeah. And they're just like spamming. And it's like payola. Like, you know, like I'm not going to like name names or say anything. But like there was a point where like I was basically offered some sort of deal with the devil situation of like, oh, well, if you do these certain things, then you'll be on these TikTok front pages like this much. And we can guarantee this much. And we can guarantee this much. And I'm like, okay, so how much are you guys like how much of what's popular is doing that? And, you know, whenever I don't really engage with what's popular, I sort of like wonder, I'm like, what kind of societal destruction is happening when you make something really popular and no one actually loves it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, and in the same way, like, I sort of feel like we're engaging in cultural destruction, like when we do things like keep making shitty Avengers movies. I think there have been some very good ones. I just want to say, I think there's been some good ones. Like I am
good Avengers movies.
Yes, okay. I'm a big fan of like the early, like Marvel and DC stuff. Like to an extent, I think some of them are brilliant. I know.
I like the Thanos arc.
The Thanos arc is good. And you know, even everyone's mad about Snow White. I don't care why people are mad about Snow White. Like I'm sure she did a good job. I didn't see the movie. Whatever they're mad about. But it's like, if it's a bad film and you're taking these like great American classics, like our culture is just built on these things that are from the last 100 years. You know, it's like if you just go and like fuck Superman and like fuck Spider-Man, although Miles Morales is pretty good. They actually did a great job with those ones.
Well, what about this kind of, let's call it aesthetic stagnation, right?
Yeah.
Like our ability to produce new novel, like IP for, you know, video franchises or music or like, I mean, how many famous actors, like, what is that movie, The Irishman? We invented the technology to de-age Robert De Niro, and that was less expensive than finding a new young, talented actor. So part of this aesthetic stagnation is because it's gotten so prohibitively expensive to produce quality work.
Well, there are new good actors, but... like
they're not as financially viable.
Yeah, they're just not as financially viable.
So how do we like encourage people to take creative risks now?
Well, I wonder if this does have something to do with how we're talking about politics, because I feel like this is the same reason we can't take more political risks. Hmm. You know, like now that you're mentioning this, it's like, well, we have to run Biden instead of someone better, even though he might be losing it, you know, because the name recognition, it's like, well, we have to de-age Robert De Niro. It's like... I'm not sure what the answer is. I'm just like, the answer is probably the same thing. So there probably is some sort of art answer here.
There maybe is just actually a young talent that you could invest in both politically and culturally.
At this point, maybe I'm totally wrong.
It's an institutional bureaucracy problem is what you're describing.
Yeah.
There's like gatekeepers who are, you know, not allowing new people to come up.
Well, we've also created this problem by making so much of the art so shitty and by making the news so whack that no one even sees it unless you could do like the really big thing.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So like that's where, you know, I do feel like we have like a literal aesthetic creative problem permeating the culture that's actually, you know, like I cannot bring myself to go on social media. I cannot bring myself to like witness a movie trailer unless two or three people vouch for it at this rate. Because I also think it's like psychologically destructive to engage in bad art.
Curation has become valuable again, right? Algorithms have gotten really disappointing. And like if a friend sends you something, like, you know, it's probably much better.
Yeah.
I think we can actually fix that if you just have to pay for algorithms rather than ad revenue. Like there is a workaround.
Yeah.
This. But I'm curious about on this problem of creative risk. How do you feel about UBI? A lot of people talk about AI, automation. It's especially appealing to young creatives who want to be able to have more decommodified free time. What are your thoughts on UBI?
I think I might be kind of pro UBI. I think it's possibly a bit psychologically destructive. To an extent, I do kind of need deadlines and things, but I still think it's less destructive than almost anything else. You know, like, and I'm not going to sit and moralize about...
It's a demotivator?
Potentially, but at this point, motivation is going to be like come like exercise. Like dopamine care is going to be like exercise, you know. I think we're in the Wild West right now where we're just in these, like, whatever, hopefully Gen Alpha or lower, maybe Gen Alpha's already lost, but like hopefully, you know, we just have to start integrating like digital hygiene in a much more aggressive way, like at every level of things. I mean, a lot of parents I know are like really care about this. Like they really, like it really matters. There's no phones in the schools.
Right.
Like, you know, but right now that's expensive. It's like if you want to find a community or a school, like that's like a prohibitively expensive thing, or you can build it with your community, which is very hard.
Yeah. I have a friend who's an artist. This is a very successful artist. This is not like every day. But he's sending his kid to a school that is like kindergarten through 12, the same cohort of students.
Yeah.
And you're not allowed to have a phone in the entire building.
That's great.
And they grow up with this like group of kids in a class of like 50 people that are their close friends without like having social media during the day.
Yeah.
That seems
great. I mean, I think that's the ideal situation.
Right. How do you feel about an internet driver's license? Like you have to be 16 to get your learner's permit. Are there certain parts of the internet that maybe should be off limits? Like should interacting with like an AI under the age of, you know, 15 or something like that, should that be not just like disencouraged socially, but should it be prohibited legally?
I just can't tell where that gets dangerous. Like that does just scare me a little bit, you know, not to be too much of a like, I don't know, survivalist out in the woods with like a gun, but like, I just really don't like where things are heading. I think at this rate also it's extremely likely that, I mean, unelected power becomes more powerful than elected power pretty soon.
Pretty soon.
Or it's already thought. They don't have militias yet.
Yes, yeah, right.
I don't know if I'm so bullish on democracy right now, but I just don't think
no one really seems
any thought given into like what the other things are, you know? Like, I don't know if I should start saying crazy theories, but like...
That's what we're here to do.
Okay. <Yeah. laughs> I mean, you know, in my opinion, probably something like Plato's Republic, and I know people say that's the church or the Catholic Church kind of did that, but like, you know, real Plato's Republic has never been tried. But like... really, we haven't actually done that. And I think it's only really achievable with something like a Neuralink or neural implants. Like, and this probably sounds really dystopian, but, you know, we are pretty close to having foolproof anti-corruption mechanisms. They're just really invasive, but they kind of would create a Plato's Republic-like situation. Like, if you have the Guardians in Plato's Republic, like, they're poor, they're, like, they're not having a good time. Like, you actually have to, like, really be invested in it. Like, Plato is like, you know, just make it so whack that only people who really care about the Republic would do this. You know, obviously the church found ways around that, but the real way to actually make it so whack that only the most like righteous, moral, really caring people are gonna do it is to like put a fucking Neuralink in their head. And like, what are you doing? Are you getting paid? Like, also, are you trying to run some sort of puritanical jihad? Because we can see that too, you know?
You know what? You got yourself in hot water. I'll get myself in hot water. It's only fair.
Okay.
You were saying you're not very bullish on democracy right now. I don't know who is. So when you're saying that, at least from the intellectual corners that I come from, there is Christianity that precedes the Enlightenment.
Yeah.
Right? There's this idea that both the king and the peasant are equal before the eyes of God, and thus that precedes equality before the law, according to John Locke, right? Like
okay,
Christian morality
I'm not gonna
precedes
know John liberal. Locke, but
you don't need to. Okay. I need to explain it for people who haven't heard of this stuff. So the Enlightenment is kind of this like philosophical inflection point at which we start to construct a secular morality that is reified through the state.
Yeah.
From Christianity, Enlightenment, liberalism, you then get things like democracy, the idea that the peasant's voice, or in this case, the worker's voice, was as important as the capitalist voice or the aristocrat's voice and what have you. The place that we're at now is that the enormous aggregation of data through these big platforms and through AI has made extremely predictive patterns for human behavior.
Yeah.
And it calls into question the idea that we are individual, rational, economic actors with the ability to make up our own minds through our cognitive faculties. And so if there is, there's a whole bunch of kind of cascading implications from this idea. that it, one, overturns the idea that you would have the franchise, a democratic voice, because the enormous collection of data already knows what you want.
Yeah.
It also overturns the idea of organizing society through markets, because we don't need all of these individual, irreducibly complex inputs to synthesize price, because we can already predict price. We've solved the knowledge problem. And so what you end up with is a kind of technocratic, yeah, planned economy through a centralized entity that is in some ways doing, benevolent infrastructure and things like this.
Yeah.
Right. But the people who are skeptical of the ability to align that centralized entity, these were the conversations that my peer group started having like 10, 15 years ago. They spun off in a totally different direction, and they tried to create a completely privatized vision of social media communications, any kind of digital connectivity that would be cryptographically sealed to prevent the collection of any of that data to then build the centralized entity, mm-hmm, right? So you have these kind of two forks,
yeah,
and one of them is inevitable. And we happen to be at the point where you can grip the wheel and steer it in one direction or another.
Yeah.
So that is kind of the teleological question that this show is designed to address, is which one of those visions are preferable and how they're going to absolutely skew any conception that you have had of 20th century right and left.
When you say cryptographic, or can I just ask if you can I ask you to like
absolutely
elaborate a bit more?
Because yeah,
I'm not like an academic.
Yeah.
And also my version
I'm not
of
either. I'm an artist.
Well, you
I just learned to mimic one.
When you say, okay, like when you're putting these two paths, because I don't necessarily put it into like a, I don't see two paths. I see a lot more than two paths.
Okay.
But like when, like, are you referring to completely privatized sector? Like when you say cryptography, like, are you referring to like blockchain and stuff? Like, what are you like?
Yeah.
You're just referring to everything being like, I mean, I don't actually mind that, but aren't there like major, like what would be the major downsides of that? If I can ask a question, I don't want to get, or I hope I'm not derailing the interview, getting too much into conversation, but what are the major downsides of like doubling down on that route? And also, isn't that route kind of like, how intertwined are blockchain and like crypto? Like how much, because right now when I see crypto or whatever, I just feel like I have to assume like it seems like whales are just like dumping, price goes down a little bit, sell, like buy a bunch. Like it seems
right,
like it's
right,
so actually, mm-hmm, like it's just consolidating power and
yep,
and
yep,
like that doesn't seem super sustainable or super safe to me. In fact, when I started really noticing that I felt like crypto was getting really corrupted, that's when I started feeling really worried, because I was kind of banking on, like at the beginning I was like, okay, this is so sick, this is like, that's when I started really feeling like, okay, the entire digital realm is up for grabs. Like this is like, you cannot make a thing and not have it essentially.
It was supposed to oust incumbents, right?
Yeah.
It was like the counter elite technology and would make a new class of people who would be,
yeah,
you know, better organizers of society. But to address your questions, like what is the downside of this fully privatized vision?
I'll ask my second question after.
Well, we can do them one at a time. Like the downside of the fully privatized vision is that everything is dependent on market transactions. So you're in like total monarchy, sovereign, absolute power invested in one individual who has ownership over the whole like, well, society or property, what have you. But because everything is cryptographically sealed, there is no ability to do enormous amounts of data collection to anticipate price. And so to plan competently any form of infrastructure or large scale project. All of that has to be realized through the market dynamic.
Does this proposal have a name? Because I don't think I've actually heard of this. Or is this something I missed?
It has a variety of different names to it.
Yeah.
Network states.
Oh, network states. Okay,
probably,
got it.
So there's a kind of gradient of proposals, let's
yes,
say,
yes,
within
yes,
network states.
Okay,
but,
I'm understanding the context of what you're saying now more. Okay, got it. And then like what do you see as like the singular alternative to this?
This is, Balaji will also say this, that there's, WeChat is the alternative.
Okay.
Which is that everything is transparent or surveilled.
Yeah.
It is collected and counted.
Okay.
And so that can kind of move in anticipation of the market. But neither of those really has much room for democratic inputs right now.
Mm-hmm.
But then the wager, the kind of conversation that we would have, like, 15 years ago, was that in this enormous collection of data model, the kind of centralized WeChat model, there still exists the possibility to have democratic inputs.
What do you think about something like Taiwanese digital democracy or even like Ground News? Like, what do you, and like, do you think these things can be integrated into either of these systems? Like how do you, and I'm just gonna like, I'll paraphrase here, from what I understand the Taiwanese digital democracy is, it's essentially, like biases are listed and things like this. And so like news and things like digital news and stuff is much harder to corrupt with foreign interference and stuff like this. Like is there a place where we can conflate either of these systems with a better information economy and that like might at least solve a lot?
I'm going to lose a lot of money right now because Ground News wants to advertise the show. But I'm going to answer your question honestly.
Yeah.
Because I always make these decisions.
I love
to
Ground
my
News, by the way. I'm not getting paid by them. I'm literally not getting paid by them, but maybe I'm wrong.
I think the problem is that one of these news sources is right. Like there is like, if you're talking about purely factual data about like OSINT, where the geo coordinates were for a specific event, like that can be verified. And there's some things that are just factually incorrect. Like, yeah, of course you flag them in certain ways, but like evidencing a spectrum of editorial opinion, like there is one correct editorial opinion. I don't think we should be agnostic about this.
Mm-hmm. Hi, everybody. This is Joshua Citarella. What you just heard is an excerpt from this week's bonus episode. If you want to hear more and get access to the full catalog for Doomscroll and other podcasts, you can support the show on Patreon or Substack, where I'm putting out new episodes every week. This is an independent show. I don't do any advertising, so your support is really what keeps this project going. Thanks for listening. See you again soon.